You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Morning, Launch Streeters. Tamara here, your host and oldest child. So you know that means I paved the way for everything my younger sister did. I got in all the trouble and she just coasted. Just kidding. Not really. You're welcome, Naomi. So do you ever think to yourself, wait, that solution worked for so-and-so that had the same challenge. Why didn't it work for me? I just had that experience yesterday with something I was working on. WTF, right? And I think this is especially true when we're dealing with big challenges and uncharted territory. When we're trying to be innovative, we look to other people that have done it successfully, and then we follow their lead, and we don't understand why we don't get the same results. I think part of that is the difference between having change happen to you and following, and actually being a change leader, being out there in the front. That's why I had Andy Shepherd, author of The Incredible Transformation of Gregory Todd, a fascinating book, we're going to get into it, and a well-known expert in the area of helping organizations craft constructive change and to be leaders in change as well. I think you'll find our discussion about how blindly following best practices is the worst thing you can do and some of the other pitfalls that many of us fall into. I know I have a few times, and I think you're actually going to be surprised by some. I know I was. Now, Andy's innovator archetype is an experiential futuristic, and you are going to hear it in his language and how he uses it to make change stick. The combo of being that futuristic, solving tomorrow's problems, always looking 10 steps ahead, innovating into the future with wanting to put things in motion and innovating by doing, actually getting out there and getting that duct tape out, that's the experiential side, has propelled his work. He is truly leveraging his unique strengths. So impressed. All right. Enjoy this one. Andy, I'm so excited for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Tamara. Yeah, likewise. Thank you for having me on.
Well, let's get to know you. What's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Oh, Tamara, I've not been asked that question for a long time. In fact, I think the last time I was asked that question, it was I was working for McKinsey at the time, and I transferred from the London office to the Cleveland office. And so they asked me to fill in this form. And at the bottom of the form was the throwaway line, tell me something personal about yourself. I didn't think too much of it. So I just told them what used to be my party piece, which was, I'm the only person I know that can insert a credit card into my mouth both ways round. So both width-wise and depth-wise. And so obviously wrote it on the form and thought nothing more of it. And then, of course, came the next whole office meeting, where the director of the office welcomed me and asked me to stand up and demonstrate my party piece.
Oh my gosh. So I have to ask, how did you discover you could do that? What moment led to that realization?
I have to honestly say I have no idea. And I can also say that I'm really glad that we don't have video on this call.
I know, because I would totally make you do it. All right. Yeah. Why don't we segue into the real reason we're on the show, although that was a fantastic opener. Thank you. Not what I was expecting. Let's dig into change. Why is managing change such an important skill right now?
Well, I guess it's always been important because people have always needed to achieve changes through changing the way other people work. But I do agree with you. I guess your implication is that I think it is becoming more important, and that's because it's becoming more important, I think, for organizations to manage the details well. So it's important how organizations operate and also how they adapt, which means changing how those details are operating. So yes, as the climate becomes more competitive, perhaps change is becoming important and change leadership all the more so.
Let me ask you this, because it's funny that you say that. It is implied in my question. And as I was writing it, I was actually thinking to myself, is it really different now than it was? I mean, I'm a Gen Xer. My parents are, you know, older baby boomers. And if you ask them, they'll say there was rapid change in their time. And if you ask me, I'll say there's rapid change. And if you ask millennials, right, they'll probably say there's rapid change too. So is it really a matter of it being more important, or is it simply a matter of just the rate or our experience of it?
I don't know. In one sense, it's probably that's probably not important. I mean, the important implication is that change leadership is important now. Whether it is any more important now than it used to be, I guess you could argue that it is. But the important thing is that it is important how we lead change, because we can't implement change well unless we know how to lead it. And particularly we can't implement it in a way for it to be sustained, which, of course, a lot of people maybe think about a little bit too late.
Let's talk a little bit about that. What do you think is the difference between how you approach one-off or versus long-term change and systematic change? And I don't know, maybe you don't approach it when it's short-term, and that's why it becomes short-term. Kind of funny, now that I say that out loud, I'm thinking, is that really an approach, or is that just a fallout of not approaching it correctly?
Ah, well, it's interesting. I should probably start by saying that my own specialty, I would describe my own specialty as extreme change, because typically I would get involved with an organization that's looking to transform processes from one end of an organization to another. So typically an operation. Personally, I typically work in industrial organizations. I'm a manufacturing engineer by background. So I would describe it as extreme change in the sense that it requires changes that are deep. So in other words, behavioral changes, because it's necessary for people to change the way they behave all the way across an organization, but also changes that are connected. So you can't allow different people to work on changes independently, because they need to come together to form a consistent whole, because you want a new system to be connected from one end of an organization to another. So I guess in that sense, I think you asked me about the difference between one-off and long-term and systematic change. Is that right? So I guess I would probably describe what I do as a combination of all three. So it's one-off in the sense that it's a one-time reboot of how the organization works. So, for example, I would just describe it as a change initiative. So you're looking to redesign an operation end to end. But it's also long term, because it can take a while in order to design the details. You can't allow too long, otherwise you lose a sense of urgency. But it's also definitely systematic in the sense that I certainly advocate a systematic approach. But also it needs to be a system of change, so you can achieve that holistic system of changes working together. And I guess it's long-term as well, in the sense that if you do it well, what you can actually do is precipitate a cultural change, and that cultural change can involve then continuous improvement and continuous innovation, so people will continue to make small changes to refine the system that you've refreshed.
Do you think that today's change management is about managing through a specific change and then, you know, letting the dust settle and then you find the new culture, the new norm? Or is it really about finding a way to leverage change in an ongoing way?
I think it's both. I mean, in my own specialty of industrial change, you see the need for both. So you do need a culture of continuous improvement where people are, otherwise you're just wasting the potential of people in your organization. So you do need people to think about how to improve the way they work every day. But also you do need change initiatives, because otherwise you can't direct that end-to-end change I was talking about. So yes, you do need that continuous innovation, but you do also need, well, I call it one-time change, but certainly change initiatives as well.
You know, you said something earlier, you kind of passed through it quickly, but I want to go back to it because I think it's so important for launch leaders to think about, given kind of where they are in their organizations and the change that they're trying to implement, especially when it comes to innovation. You said, you know, thinking about changes that are connected. And as you were saying that, yeah, I was thinking about how it really does make a difference when you, with whatever your role is, start to think about what's happening downstream and upstream from you and how to connect the dots. So will you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think that's often where change initiatives fail. It happens in a silo because we're just not connected to the bigger picture.
So in operations, it's particularly important, because if you were to look at changes in a particular area, you can end up trying to address symptoms of a problem that that is caused upstream. So unless you're actually looking at the connected whole, you can't actually solve the root causes of problems. So it's yes, it's particularly important to look at connected change.
So you wrote this article on LinkedIn that I actually read twice because I thought it was so interesting about how to be the Toyota of your industry. And you wrote that the pitfall we get into is trying to emulate what we observe rather than applying the principles of our own situation. To me, I kind of thought of, well, that's like blindly following best practices without our own context. So why doesn't that work?
Well, if you look at something, that might work well in the company in which you observe it. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work well in your company, because what you're seeing is a solution that's been designed to solve a particular problem in that particular business. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that you've got that particular problem. So it's all about problem solving, really. And what we need to be doing as leaders and change leaders is to be able to understand what the problems our business or organizations are facing and solve those problems for ourselves, and not necessarily to copy solutions from other places. And we see that all the time in industrial change. You probably heard about something called Lean, something called, well, the Toyota Production System, but a big problem within the understanding of Toyota Production System is that people can only see practices that have been changed. They can't see the principles that those practices have been built on. So they'll look at those practices and think, oh, okay, I'll copy those and I'll put them in my organization. But if you're not careful, you can actually create more problems than you solve.
God, I feel like you just spoke the truth there about creating more problems than you solve and trying to leverage somebody else's best practice. And, you know, I think that we see it all the time. We see it in branding, marketing, innovation, organizational development. You kind of see it across the board. I think that's a really powerful lesson, what you're saying, for launch readers out there around, it's okay to look at other people's best practices, but put them into your own context and take the principles out of them, not necessarily the tactics.
Yes, and it all comes from a lack of understanding or incomplete understanding. And I think a big problem today is that we really don't know what we don't know, and we're probably becoming less patient and less probably less humble as well in considering that there might be things that we don't know. I think today confidence is perhaps valued above substance sometimes.
Do you think too on that sometimes it's a matter of we also are less humble about what we don't know, or admitting that, hey, look, times are uncertain, or hey, the future is uncertain. We'll never really know. We don't have a crystal ball. But also that we absorb a lot of information, but it's I don't know what to say there. It's irrelevant. It's clutter. It's not necessarily the right information to move us forward.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I mean, another problem I see is that we feed off sound bites, and we feed off something that we can just package up and remember easily, and we're looking for, you know, three top tricks to do something, and, you know, three key success factors all the time. And I mean, I know, because, you know, I use LinkedIn, and LinkedIn articles are built on these things, and they're attractive to us. We want that quick, you know, bolt on that we feel it can develop our leadership capability. But unfortunately, a key to leading change is actually appreciating the art as a whole, because if we take it out of kilter and just focus on one particular aspect of it, then we're not going to lead change successfully.
So let's build on that, what you were just saying. What do you think makes a good change leader?
Well, I would have to say, well, that it involves looking at a number of things and looking and holding those things together, practicing them together. So, for example, yes, you need to look at the physical changes you're going to make, the changes to the practices. That's number one. But number two, you need to look at unseen changes that are behind there. So, for example, what might have been influencing the physical changes that you're trying to change? Because unless you change incentives, then actually those changes aren't going to be sustained. So number two is the unseen changes. You also need to look at lots of principles, and a lot of people will agree with those principles, but if you don't hold them at the forefront of your mind or use an approach that's been driven by them, then you tend to overlook them when you're in the cut and thrust of leading change. But you also need a process that helps to bring people together and through that change. That process needs to be guided by your principles. You need to prepare the process well. You also need to have the right roles and responsibilities of who's leading change, and ensure, for example, that your line managers are making all the decisions, which is easy to forget in the cut and thrust of leading change. And you also need to have the right skills and behaviour. You need to have the right influencing skills, but you need to have leaders that are engaged in making decisions, because sometimes leaders are either over-involved or not involved enough in their own areas. And so change leadership sometimes tests an organization's chain of command in ways in which they've not been tested before.
So can you walk us through an example of whether that's a client of yours or just one that you think really emulates really smart change leadership from start to finish?
Well, I guess picking up on what we've said before, there was one, you know, we mentioned before about being prepared to know what you don't know, and there was one particular CEO I worked with who really impressed me, because he asked me about how to lead change in a way that no one else has actually asked me. And the way he asked just demonstrated his complete security in his ability as a leader. Most people won't ask questions because they think they should already know them. But the way in which he asked those questions showed me actually that he was invested in leading change. He wasn't actually just protecting his own image or protecting some limited understanding that he already knew about leading change. But also the questions he was asking me were questions about how to just unlock the potential from his workforce. You know, what might really be motivating people? So it was the questions he was asking that really, well, it just I knew from the outset that the change was going to be successful. And in fact, I ended up supporting this particular company through 8 years of transformation, and a lot of them achieved substantial success through transformation.
You said something really interesting and I think important in there about this CEO in particular, and that he wasn't trying to, you know, protect his territory, his ego, however you want to put it. Do you think that part of successful change leadership and the process itself is really about, in the upfront, taking time to make sure that culture, if there is one, of, you know, territorial feelings, of ego, of, you know, what's at stake for me, has to be dealt with before you can even get to the real change itself? It seems like that could really hinder it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think from certainly my experience is that leaders will often rush into change, sometimes without even stopping to consider how they should lead change. I mean, at the most extreme, leaders will only focus on what to change, and that's at the complete exclusion of how they should change. And they just assume that leaders tend to be quite excited about what their business is doing and what their business should be doing in the future. So they will engage at length, including as a team, about what their business should look like in the future, and then assume that actually, right, now let's do it, without actually considering how they can make that change. That's an example of how not to lead change, certainly.
There's a lot of examples of not, aren't there?
yes. But again, you know, there's nothing wrong with making mistakes, so long as we learn from making mistakes.
Well, don't you find too that if your team knows that your intention is good, the mistakes are okay? It's when they don't trust your intention as a leader that's where things get a little muddy.
Yes, that's true, but there can also be a problem when leaders might go rush into change with good intentions, but actually if they behave in a certain way, they can unnecessarily offend people that it's very difficult to recover from. So, for example, a principle for leading sustainable change is that people should be involved from the outset. So anyone that's going to be substantially affected by a change should be involved in that change, so that they can be led through the process of diagnosing and designing and implementing the changes that they're going to be responsible for sustaining. But if you rush headlong into change, then actually you could reach the details before and communicate what the changes should be to somebody who you then expect to sustain them. And it might be too late. And it might be too late not through any malice of leadership, but just through ignorance of not really considering how the lead change properly.
You know, this is such great advice for launch treaters out there about, you know, whether you are leading a tiny little change, a new initiative that you want to implement, or something massive across your organization. What Andy's saying here about do not rush into it. Think it through. Mm. Think about, I think what I'm hearing from you that's so resonating with me is think about how it's going to impact those around you, not just tomorrow, but, you know, down the road. And I know I tend to, as the, you know, president of my own company, I tend to be like, all right, here's what we need to do, because I see the vision. I know. But I don't always take a second to back up and go, okay, I see this vision, but how do I articulate this to the team? And how do I think about the impact it's going to have as we get downstream?
Yes, but it's really difficult, Tamara, and yeah. That's part of the problem. It's difficult to know how to approach any of those, you know, seven aspects that I was describing earlier on, let alone to practice them all simultaneously. So, I mean, so for example, even the principles, they have paradoxes. So, yes, it's good to involve people in change, but at the same time, it's important to direct change. Because if you go too far to the involvement extreme, you're essentially creating the expectation that people can shape their own change, which isn't necessarily the case, because you might need to achieve a particular end-to-end goal. And so you can only allow people to shape a certain amount of that change themselves. You need to accomplish a certain direction. And so, for example, you also mentioned taking time about change, which, of course, is really important in order to prepare change and also to allow enough time to design the details. But at the same time, we also know that it's really good to create a sense of urgency to overcome the inertia. So you need to find the right balance between these principles. And yet you need to be able to practice these principles suddenly all at once, you know, in the, you know, the cut and thrust of leading a hot-blooded organization that's full of distinctive personalities and pressures, and in an organization that's full of unique constraints. So it's managing change is good fun. There's a lot of things to consider.
You know, I don't know why this is what it reminds me of, but it reminds me of doing an Olympic lift, like the clean and jerk, where there's 15 things that have to happen at the same time for you to get the lift right. And you've got to remember all of it at once to do the first part of the lift.
I've never done a clean and jerk. That probably explains why I've never done a clean and jerk. Often compared to swimming, because in swimming, you don't tend to learn how to swim by reading a textbook. But, you have to get a lot of things right at the same time. Otherwise, you tend to sink.
Yeah, that's
right. It's the same thing. Essentially, you can only learn about change in a real situation. And in a hot-blooded organization that I referred to that's full of unique pressures and constraints and personalities, because that's what leading change is all about. But at the same time, you need to be able to practice enough of it simultaneously so that you don't sink or create unnecessary problems that you then have to set about solving, in addition to, you know, not achieving the change that you're after.
You said you have to keep a sense of urgency to overcome inertia. What is that all about? How does inertia just kill our change efforts?
Oh, well, a good example is that in any organization, there's always plenty of things to analyze. We have a lot of data, and we're very good at analyzing things. And we're also very good at asking people to prove something. And if they prove it, we'll believe in it. And so there's always more analysis that can be asked for, and always more analysis that could be done. And if we're not careful, then the more analysis that we give time for is that the more it feels that actually nothing's really going to happen. And so that sense of urgency tends to drain away, and then it becomes incredibly hard to actually agree on a final solution. And so we need to create that sense of urgency in order to say, right, well, there is going to be a change, and we need to analyze enough so that we can be confident that it's going to work. You might never be able to prove it, but that's actually what it means to have faith in the system that you're trusting will work. But actually, that should never be the expense of getting it done.
So this is so fascinating to me. I just have to take a tangent off and talk about your innovator archetype for a second, because I'm hearing it in what you're saying, and I'm just smiling over here. So you took our assessment, the IQE, our personality assessment, and your innovator archetype is experiential and futuristic. And so experientials, which I'm also one, are people who learn in motion. It's all about the action. You want to implement it and see what the results are. That's how you innovate, is by doing. And futuristics like you are all about the future, Tomorrowland. What's the implications, 10 steps down the road? And I'm smiling because as I'm hearing you talk about this, I'm hearing your experiential side come out in this, adding this urgency to the process of change management versus it just being about the long term, but also about the immediate and the short term. In your swimming example, because that's all about all the things you have to do to stay afloat. And then, you know, overcoming inertia too. I think for experientials, inertia is one of the biggest killers of energy, motivation. We need to be in motion. But also the futuristic side is all about tomorrow. And I keep hearing you talk about, you know, what's the implications, the impact, the downstream, the thinking through what's next. So it's fascinating to me, from my perspective, listening to you, I think to myself, wow, no wonder he's so good at change management. He's all about doing action, like let's get some immediate results and things happening, but also let's think about the long-term implications of this. And I'm just curious from your perspective how you think that combination for you has helped you be such a successful change leader.
It's interesting. I found your type indicator, your innovation type indicator, really, really interesting, because when it described the type of innovator I was, it resonated with me, particularly this learn by doing.
Yeah.
And it made me think, is there any other way?
Obviously.
I want to read all the other types of innovation, but I know that I think the way I'm wired makes me particularly suited to lead the type of change that I do the type of extreme change that I described earlier, you know, where you are working to bring people together in a live environment to achieve something together and to precipitate cultural change. And when I looked at some of the other type indicators, I could see how perhaps they would be suited to innovation and change in other types of settings.
Yeah. That combination, just for people listening who are thinking, oh, I should really engage with him. That combination of now and tomorrow is really powerful, and not a common combination, by the way, in the assessment. So I thought it was really interesting. I just wanted to take a second because a couple things you said just really sparked, like, oh my gosh, you just said it. I want to flip gears and talk about your book, because you wrote this book called The Incredible Transformation of Gregory Todd. I want to talk about what's in the book, but before I do that, I just have to ask, why write a business book as a novel? That's fascinating.
I've already been talking about the different aspects of managing change. Several aspects need to come together in order to lead change well. Now, I feel that if I was to write let me take you back to when I was working as a I'm still a management consultant, but when I was working with the McKinsey & Company, there came a time when I was asked to train other clients and consultants. But sometimes I was asked to do that from a conference room, and that involved therefore dissecting the subject of change leadership. And I felt that whenever you dissected the subject, that the lifeblood of change leadership, you know, just drained out. You know, so you can talk about each of these aspects, but unless you're actually immersed in a situation, it's very difficult to get a feel for what it really means to lead, you know, real personalities in a unique setting to achieve something that's specific to that particular organization. And so people that were leaving my sessions, I felt, a lot of them didn't argue with a lot of the stuff that I was saying, but I didn't feel like I'd equip them very well in order to then go and apply everything simultaneously in a live environment. And that really concerned me, because I know that I only changed the way I led change because somebody had shown me how to go about doing it. I already thought I knew quite a lot about change, but I had a particular role model when I worked for McKinsey & Company, somebody that had been trained in the Titus Supply Support Center, that had been invested in overhauling management beliefs in the companies that they were transforming, as well as implementing Toyota Production System. But in essence, I'd only changed the way I thought about change because I'd been shown. And so I felt that actually it was important to show people how to lead change well. And rather than writing a traditional textbook, I thought it would be much more effective just to show people how to do that. And a novel was the best way I could think about of painting that moving picture of what it means to lead change well, but also to show people some of the common pitfalls of leading change. You know, what happens, for example, if you leave out some of these seven aspects of leading change, or focus exclusively on one of them?
You know, I think it's so powerful to give people a story that provides context. I mean, theory is theory. It's fine, but it's so hard to apply that unless you really have the context. And I think, you know, what you've done with a story is such a more interesting way. And frankly, I mean, how many business books can you read about theory? It's so nice to get to one that's like, oh, this is an actual story. And we're storytellers, it's human nature. So I think it's great that you brought it in there. If I picked up the book today, I'd never read it, what big things would you want me to take away from it?
I think what I would hope is that it gives you a flavor of what it means to lead change. Now, I wouldn't want you to go away with I could lead better change if I did X, Y, Z, because I guess that goes against what we've been saying. But if it gives you a flavor or enough of a model of what it means to lead change well, that could help you to put it into practice yourself in your own environment. So that's what I'm really hoping to achieve, is to give people a flavor of what it means to practice everything together, to swim in a live environment. That would be great. And also that gives you awareness then of perhaps what there is to know, what more there is to know. And then that's things that you can then go on to practice or learn more about, rather than just continuing with a blind spot of a lack of an awareness of what you don't know, which can then lead to making unintentional mistakes.
Yeah, I'll put a link to the book in the show notes, of course. But I just have to say, I'm really appreciative of the novel format. And I know that when I read books like that, I'm able to understand what in my business context matches and doesn't match what you're saying. So I have a better fit to know, okay, this makes sense here, and I don't have information for over here, or it's going to be different in this way. And I think there's something powerful about the novel approach that allows us to do that.
Well, I look forward to your novel then tomorrow. What's your novel?
It's funny, I'm writing one as we speak, but it was a great reminder to me of note to self, storytelling.
Oh, that's great.
Storytelling.
I think it also helps to, I think it's good to recognize that as well as business people, we're people.
Right.
And actually, when I take a flight home from a week working at a client somewhere, and actually if you can write an educational text as a novel, then actually you can offer people the best of both worlds, and it's something that can be educational and engaging.
Yeah, some of my favorite books are from, I think it's Robert Greene, is The Laws of Power, 48 Laws of Power and Influence, or his two books. I might be getting the titles wrong, but they are all stories and then broken down. Mm. And I could read them over and over again, unlike most business books in reality, where I tend to put them down after a couple of chapters. So let's say I'm leading a change initiative, or I see change coming, I'm a leader, and I want to reach out to you. Where can I go to connect with you to learn more?
Well, I guess a good starting point is I've got a website, ajshepherd.com. You can also look me up on LinkedIn, AJ Shepherd Change Leadership. So Shepherd, SHEPPARD.
Excellent. Last question. What's the one piece of advice you'd give a launch streeter out there who's looking at, you know, a change initiative in some way coming down the pipeline for them to lead?
Well, probably don't look for one trick. I don't look for one piece of advice that you can go away.
It's like the opposite of what we just said, right?
No, actually it's not. I think actually what I would say is be prepared to unlearn what you already know about change. That's something that I wish someone had told me earlier on, because I think there's an unarticulated assumption that most of us have of career progression, and that every experience we have is valuable and it adds on to what we've already experienced. But I was very fortunate in that I experienced something that overhauled my thinking about change and forced me to unlearn what I thought I already knew about how much change could be achieved so quickly. So for me, one of the main lessons is to be prepared to unlearn before you can learn about change.
Can you
share? So in other words, it's practicing change leadership in the way you think about change.
Can you share with us that experience really quickly?
Sure. Yeah. It was my first engagement when I joined McKinsey & Company, and it was in the hands of the gentleman I mentioned earlier, whose idea about how much change could be made so quickly had been shaped by very different experiences to mine. I'd grown up as an engineer and a project manager, and so I was used to managing change, but I was used I thought I already knew how much change I could expect. Thankfully, I wasn't leading the engagement, and probably within 4 months, if I had been leading the engagement, perhaps within 4 months, I might have achieved about 10 to 15%. I might have helped the client achieve about 10 to 15% improvement. And as it was, by the end of 4 months, productivity had doubled, the footprint had halved. We paved the way to consolidate two facilities into one. We collapsed lead time from 2 months to 2 weeks. And if you'd have told me beforehand that would have been possible, I would never have believed you.
Huh. So maybe a launch treater's first step is to call you and ask you what they need to unlearn.
Maybe. Maybe. Or just challenge your own assumptions about what it takes to lead change and what degree and speed of change is possible.
Well, I think that's an incredible piece of advice, especially when we think that, you know, change is evolution. And if we go in with all these assumptions of how things should and shouldn't be, we're probably hindering the progress to begin with. I mean, they're kind of in opposition of each other just to begin with, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. And our expectations, unfortunately, become self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
If we believe that something's not possible, it won't be possible. Now, I've heard that repeated often, but in a trite kind of way without much substance behind it. I mean, that doesn't mean that if you believe something, you can make it possible, but actually it broadens your understanding to find the knowledge and the capabilities you need to make something happen. And I guess that's what I've been trying to model in terms of the various things you need to hold together in order to lead change well.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for joining us. I know for a fact that I have unlearned a few things about what I thought about managing change, which I have to do all the time. So I appreciate it. I'm sure Launch Streeters appreciate it. And we'll have to have you back to talk more about what to unlearn.
Thank you, Tamara. Thanks very much for having me as a guest.
And that's a wrap. But before you go, did you hear how Andy is driving change with his clients? Here's the great news. All that conversation about being a change leader is stuff that you can do too, regardless of where you are in the organization. You don't need VP or leader by your title to be that change leader. In fact, doing that will help you get recognized as the rock star innovator that I know you are. And hey, I kind of want to help you do that. So here's what I want you to do. Go to our website, go to launchstreet.com, GOTO launchstreet.com, click us in the show notes, and click on our blogs and podcasts. There is so much free innovation goodness on those pages. It will have you acting like a leader in change and innovation in no time. I mean, why make it hard when the tools are all there for you already? Make it easy on yourself. All right, Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.